Hello and welcome to another Care Home Management magazine podcast. I'm Alan Rustad, the former publisher of Care Home Management, and today we're going to be discussing four words that have been on most people's lips for the past few months, and they continue to be at the centre of many conversations. The words, cost of living crisis. We're facing it every day in our personal lives, but what about care homes? What effect is it having on their lives day by day? And what ideas have care homes come up with to tackle the problems? Well, with me today to discuss all of this are three people who are actively helping care homes manage these challenges. They are Mark McCarthy, who is the CFO of Zupa, Rachel Venditti, the Business Development Manager at Allman Hall, and Christina Larkin, Chief Data and Marketing Officer at JLA. This podcast is kindly sponsored by RotorCloud, online software that makes managing your care team's rotas, timesheets, and annual leave easy. Right, let's crack on. But just before we get properly stuck in, let's get a bit of extra insight into the three of you and give our listeners, in 30 seconds or so, an introduction to you and a little bit about your companies. So Mark McCarthy from Zupa, can you lead us off, please?
My name is Mark McCarthy. I am the CFO at Zupa. Zupa is a technology company that provides the best-in-class catering management platform that is used across hospitality, leisure, education, and the care industry sectors. We have a product that's called CaterNet, which is really easy to use. It has real-time procurement system, provides stock control and spending insight. It also helps provide centralized recipe management and allergen management with associated live reporting. It's a robust system that's been around for many years and is scalable for any size.
Thank you very much indeed there, Mark. Let's go on to Rachel at Allman Hall. Tell us a little bit about you and Allman Hall.
My name is Rachel Venditti. I'm the Business Development Manager at Allman Hall, and I focus on the care and healthcare sector. So Allman Hall are an independent family-owned catering procurement company. So we support care and healthcare that have in-house catering provision. And what we do at the core is create sort of really significant cost savings for them, which is, of course, hugely important at the moment. But that's coupled with support and also a team of experts who can provide advice, guidance and training to help them save time and become more efficient.
And last but not least, let's bring in Christina from JLA.
So I'm Chief Data and Marketing Officer at JLA. We supply and maintain critical equipment such as laundry and catering appliances and fire solutions and heating and aircon to over 25,000 organisations across the UK. Our home is in Rippendin in Yorkshire, and we started out as a laundry company 50 years ago, and we now cover far more, as I just mentioned. We service care homes, hospitals, schools, hotels, but care homes do account for the majority of our customer base and continue to be a key focus for us. And as Chief Data and Marketing Officer, obviously I cover marketing and also analytics, which we might cover on because I'm a bit of a geek at heart. But I'm also the exec responsible for ESG, which when we set out on the ESG path sort of 12 to 18 months ago was a key focus. But interestingly, as the cost of living's hit, a lot of what we were looking at from an ESG perspective, and by that, it's sort of the new corporate social responsibility, so environment, social and governance, actually really plays nicely and is hugely relevant to reducing costs.
Okay, well, we'll look into that a little bit later on. I look forward to hearing more about that. So let's kick off with those dreaded words, cost of living crisis, then. Let's begin with Mark, because Mark, you used to be at Sanctuary Care. Now you're, I say, kind of on the outside looking in, but you know what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. And overall, from your experience of working with care homes during this last, since the energy prices went up and everything else went up, what's the overall feeling that you're getting of the sector?
In terms of the cost pressures that are facing the care homes, they've always had those issues in terms of cost because the funding is lower than is required to fund the cost of care. But the key things are going to be the energy costs because they're massive places. They have to have the heating on constantly because of the frailty of the residents. And obviously the energy prices continue to rise. Food costs again went up in November up to 16.5% in terms of cost inflation. So they're being hit from all angles. Because obviously they're intensive places to run and expensive places to run as well. And what I'm hoping I can add to this this session is some of the ideas that I've discovered and introduced and some insight and how people can save money within the care home sector and bring the best possible service to its residents and employment opportunities to staff, despite the cost pressures everybody is facing. So the most important tip in battling the fight to reduce costs is really making it everybody's responsibility across the care home. There's no one person can reduce the costs on their own. And even if you do reduce costs, you need a team of people to help maintain that cost reduction because prices will continue to creep and your costs will continue to creep as well. So the first two tips I'm going to bring into it are around staffing, because everybody knows that without government support, there's no silver bullet to reducing the time and cost of trying to fill every staff shortage or covering every shift. But I do believe there are a few things you can do that will help save time and money and also help the mental health and well-being of residents and staff. The first one is to consider the introduction of volunteers. Okay, I know they don't count in your staff cost in your staff numbers, and they have to pass a DBS check before they can work in the home or volunteer in the home, I should say. But I do believe they will add to that mental health of all residents through daily activities such as reading a book, looking through photos and playing a game, or simply sitting with residents to watch a film. You might ask why that's a cost-saving measure or how that can help, but I do believe that that helps reduce some of the stress in running a care home, which means that people are able to focus on what they're doing and how much money they're spending or what they're wasting because they have that time rather than working under constant pressure.
Another benefit, Mark, just to chip in there for a moment, Mark, do you find that then is something that care homes have been a bit slow to take up because there's a lot of good well-being and good feelings towards care homes. People come and visit relatives. Do you find they don't perhaps tap into that resource as much as they should?
I think that they were starting to before the pandemic, but obviously with the pandemic, it basically took that away because of the lack of social interaction. So focusing on getting the care home running well and sorting out those associated supply chain issues might have led to care homes forgetting that volunteers are a vital part. Equally, there are other care homes that haven't tried it or won't try it because they see it as a time-sapping process. But once you do step over that line, you get it going. Volunteers, like you said, they do want to work in care homes. They will share the good word. You will get that closer link to your community. You will increase the profile of your home. So I do think it's worth the time and effort. And we, from my experience at Sanctuary, we had over 200 volunteers with an aim of getting up to 400-500 volunteers because the impact was huge, absolutely huge. Those residents that needed some one-to-one time that you can't really afford to do in a care home, those volunteers were the right people to help do that. Or engaging things like running a quiz or helping at meal times really did help. And the reason why they're important is because it helps reduce staff turnover, and staff cost is the biggest cost in the care home sector. And it Indeed. Also can help with quality.
Indeed it is. We'll come on to some of your other tips as well in just a moment. Let me just bring the others in for a moment. Rachel, from your experience in the catering area, I would thought volunteers could be very useful indeed for mealtimes. And do you have much experience of that?
Yeah, and I sort of understand what Mark's saying. Staffing's a huge issue, obviously within care homes themselves for their own staff and across catering, across supply chain. Potentially challenges, but not insurmountable, around training, food safety, and actually catering for people within care, but certainly would be beneficial to look at plugging some of those gaps that people are experiencing within the homes with their catering teams, which has such an impact on the service they can deliver when they're short-staffed.
And Christina as well, is that something that rings a bell with you? Do you think that better use could be made of volunteers, greater use made of volunteers?
It's a really interesting one, actually. It's not something I've given much thought to, but it is interesting hearing Mark talk about that. My father-in-law actually does exactly that and has done for a number of years now. He volunteers at a care home local to him, and he goes in every Friday and runs the quiz, and he loves it. He's got to know the residents. They really look forward to it each week. And it takes the pressure off the staff. So it really resonated hearing Mark say that.
Well, that's good to hear. That's interesting. So, Mark, that's struck a chord already. What about some other tips that you've come up with?
Yeah, so line management meetings. We at Sanctuary, we introduced something we call 10 at 10, which really brought the whole team together in terms of looking at the good, the bad and the ugly each day. Those meetings would include a manager or a deputy, a nurse or a carer, the handy person, activities, a chef or a housekeeper. And the idea was that every day, just for 10 minutes, people came together to communicate what the real issues were of the day, to find out ideas and solutions and how they might work together to solve them. So good news factors, there's a brand new resident moving in today. They like this type of activity. So picking up on what Christine just said there, make sure that the volunteer on Friday knows that they would like to be part of the quiz, and as an example, makes things tick and move through the home. Bad news, resident's really ill, or the CQC inspection didn't go well. What are we going to do together to help resolve these things? Because these are the things they picked up. Or you have these things that just don't get done, like fixing a washing machine. Because it's broken down again, which is a big, big time factor on getting the linen through the process. Or we've got complaints about the quality of food, and how are we going to work together to get those things right? Or staff have gone sick and we can't get agency cover. Therefore, we need to get the right amount of team to work 12-hour shifts on top of, which is basically on top of staff that are burnt out, frustrated, tired. So I think my message is, if there are care homes out there and they don't have these types of meetings on a daily basis, you might think things are working well, but I think you will find by starting these meetings that you will improve communication, mm-hmm. you'll improve understanding of the problem and how you can work together, and therefore enhance teamwork, and everything will become better for it, and people will own the issue, and they'll want the meetings to continue regardless of whether the management are in the building or not, because they know it's effective and it helps solve those frustrating things day to day.
Rachel, would you agree with that? Because I don't know about you, I've sat in meetings at care homes actually and watched staff at work where they seem to drag on interminably long without a great deal of focus. I think it's important surely to bring that focus to it.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea for those homes that aren't doing that. I think when everyone's under pressure and there's challenges, there can result in people ending up in silos in their own team and what they're delivering for the homes.
I was going to ask you, Christina, with your father-in-law involved at care home doing quizzes, does he get involved in meetings there and staff meetings and how things can be improved, or do they tend to keep the volunteers kind of at arm's length?
I couldn't speak for the broader volunteer community at that care home, but it's certainly not something he gets involved in. But you know, potentially he would be interested. Potentially he would be keen to kind of do more and involve himself more if he felt the opportunity was there. So it's an interesting point. I think, you know, to Mark's earlier point about make it everyone's responsibility on the cost front. I think the, you know, overlaying these meetings and focusing, right, we've seen a spike in costs over here, you know, can get different perspectives on the problem and how it might be able to be resolved in a very snappy way, because we know that time is of the essence in a care home, don't we? So all makes sense.
And presumably you would welcome, wouldn't you, Christina, that staff involvement rather than just top down saying we've got to save money here. You can often get a better feel for what's going on from what's coming from the ground floor.
Yeah, certainly that's how, you know, at JLA how we work. We're very keen that, you know, we ensure that those on the front line, as it were, are kind of informing key decisions, and it shouldn't be top down. You know, they're the experts. They're the ones sort of working their area day in, day out. So, you know, exactly the same for a care home. You know, the experts are the ones who are in the kitchen every day or in the laundry room every day, and they're the ones who will have ideas, and it's about coaxing those those thoughts and ideas and making sure they feel they have a platform to share their thoughts.
And Mark, with your ideas that you've come up with there, and I'm sure you've got some more in a moment, but just one thing I would ask is that the use of volunteers, the use of management meetings, of team meetings, seems straightforward enough. Does it sometimes get lost in the hurly-burly of everyday action in a care home, that being able to think that way and introduce these sort of changes kind of get lost in the mix?
Absolutely. That's the reason why we came up with a very straightforward process of keeping it to 10 minutes and three key issues. The other thing in a care home is you can never plan for what's going to happen. You might set your day out, but you know, a resident will be ill, something will change, something might break down, something exciting might happen, which distracts the whole day. So having that 10 minutes set aside each day to focus on three key areas really does help. And once you start doing it, the most cynical of people do buy into it, because as Rachel just said just now, meetings can go on forever and ever, and without focus they will take even more time up when there's no time in the care home. But just those 10 minutes each day are critical.
Any other points you want to make at that stage then, Mark? Wonderful tips that we can pass on to the care home.
Wonderful tips. there are a couple that are the just observational tips that I've seen happen, and they're linked to energy use, and they're simple things like putting up light switches, signs under switches to say switch them off. Equally, when it's cold outside and the heating's pumping out, I can guarantee there'll be windows open across the care home. So it's important to remind staff to close those windows, because although it's very nice to have a nice warm car park, right now, nobody can afford that. Another one, which will probably be missed in most homes, is wait for your kitchen staff to arrive and give them 5 or 10 minutes to settle down, and then go and wander into the kitchen and find out how many of the gas ring burners are on and how long they're on for. I think people will be amazed by how warm a kitchen is and how many hours the gas ring burner's burning without it actually cooking any food.
Okay, thanks for that, Mark. We'll come on to those points when we discuss Rachel and Christina's topics that they want to discuss, and we'll bring those into play. Just one final point, Mark, before we do that. You're obviously talking to care homes on a very regular basis. This December now, we're getting into the serious part of winter. What is the overall mood that you're assessing? Is there an element of desperation, or now that we know that the costs are going up, both food, energy, and everything else, have they been able to at least understand what's going on and make a provision for that, or is there still a really profound sense of worry?
I think using the word you just said there, I think there's a profound sense of worry and absolute frustration, and maybe even anger, that people are not listening, because the message that's being sent from the care sector has not changed. It's just got worse because the costs have gone up. As I mentioned briefly earlier, funding is such an important thing in the care home, especially if care homes are predominantly occupied by local authority residents. Local authorities do not pay the right amount of money for that weekly cost of care. There's been a number of pieces of work done to look at how they can provide better funding for care homes, but no one ever presses the button. And even recently, with obviously because of the impact of COVID, so you sort of understand it, the move to increase funding within care for the longer term, that money's been withdrawn. So how do care homes afford to keep their doors open? Mm. It is only from a private market, or hopefully from a wealthy investor to be riding out this storm that still exists. But really and truthfully, the care home sector are desperately needing the government to listen and to take action.
Rachel, I think you wanted to make a point on that.
Yeah, I think just really to sort of echo what Mark's saying, and also to add that care homes have just gone through the most horrendous period imaginable with COVID. So there's a lot of bruised individuals who have really had quite a traumatic time. So the cost of living crisis, the cost pressures are coming, obviously, and part of the contributing factor is COVID itself, but coming at a time when people are really, as I say, quite bruised already, to then be trying to deal with another crisis in terms of costs.
Indeed. And Christina, you want to make a point on that too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously speak to customers all the time, and something that really shocked me was we've had a number of customers in the care home sector come to us and say, actually, this is worse for us than COVID was. This is going to be worse. And you just sit back and think, how can that be? How can that be the case?
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast.
Providing the best quality care means having the right people in the right place at the right time. And that's exactly where Rotacloud can help. Rotacloud makes managing your care team's rotas, attendance, and annual leave easy. With its simple drag-and-drop planner, you'll be creating rotas in minutes, while its built-in budgeting tools mean you'll know exactly how much you're spending on staffing before sending the rota out. It could even help you reduce your agency bill. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotacloud.com/chm and see how much easier organising your care team can be.
Well, let's look at some of the specifics now. Let's begin with Rachel and as far as care catering goes. Now, we know inflation, the prices have gone up and up. Where are we standing on that as far as care homes are concerned at the moment?
We know food plays such an important role for residents. It's their enjoyment. It's such a big, important part of each day, but critically for their health and well-being. So quality and offer just can't be compromised. So there's a real challenge going on at the moment, sort of balancing escalating costs with service delivery. We know we are experiencing the fastest rate of inflation for about 30 years, and we've kind of been in a perfect storm when it comes to food inflation, with factors impacting all at the same time, which has caused costs to increase in the way they have. Things we know, such as staffing across supply chain, the cost of energy, which we've touched on, shipping costs, the impact of COVID, also weather conditions. And we had a weather event called La Nina for the second consecutive year. Last time we saw that, we also experienced double-digit inflation. And of course, the crisis in Ukraine. So where we're at now is, I think this morning, confirmed 16.6%. Percent for food inflation. I think food and beverage was at 16.4. That had increased from 16.2 last month. So overall CPI has dropped slightly this month from 11.1 to 10.7. But we know that food is the highest contributing factor to the level of CPI at the moment, and that's not yet decreasing. The thing we know with the food supply chain is there are various points where inflation would be impacted and things would increase. And what we do know is there's still inflation in the supply chain. UK food manufacturers are still experiencing increases in the price of goods that they're buying. So that will obviously work its way through to customer and end user. So very uncertain market at the moment. Two sort of thoughts on where it can go. The view is that we're going to peak early next year, and then we're going to start to see a gradual decline across the next 12 months. But we're, of course, still in a period of inflation. We're not in negative, where we then start to see a decrease in costs. Decreases and decrease in inflation and prices could happen from various factors. We've started to see oil just begin to come down now in price. Food production, very fossil fuel dependent. Manufacturing, packaging, storage. Also, we've got this sort of global slowdown. The UK recession could result in falling demand, which then puts downward pressure on prices, something we'll see post-Christmas when everyone's being a bit more careful with what they're spending and spending less. Also, we could have better weather in 2023, post that La Nina event that I talked about, could lead to improved harvest, so more robust supply. Looking on the other side of the coin, the crisis in Ukraine will continue to impact inflation. We know that about 42% of global exports of vegetable oil are from Ukraine. So therefore, we have impact on fuel, fertilisers, and also wheat, big producers of wheat. Gas prices may keep prices high. And there's industries within food production where you use a lot of energy, very high input costs. So UK egg industry, I'm sure we're all aware of challenges in the UK egg industry with avian flu, but also increased costs, which is causing a decline in flock. and essentially sort of market failure and sort of our ability to be self-sufficient when it comes to eggs. So mixed picture. I think there are some positives, but I think we'll have to see early next year.
And as far as you're concerned then at Allman Hall, what can you do to make it better for care homes? It's as you say, it's a mixed picture, although it's there aren't many highlights that we can really cheer. But your job day in, day out is to try and find those solutions.
Yes.
You must be scratching your heads and wondering where to turn to next, aren't you?
I mean, as you say, Allman Hall, the purpose of what we're doing is to support care homes to sort of reduce costs, mitigate costs. And there's two ways that care homes can do that, through their purchasing and procurement, but also their own operational practices. And I'll touch on some of those. I think it is important to say that, you know, we can't avoid food inflation. You know, prices have gone up and may continue to go up in the short term. And that's because there is so much inflation in the supply chain that suppliers just cannot absorb that. So it's fair that it is coming to the customer. That the key thing is minimizing the impact. And that's what we do every day, is looking at how we can minimize that impact. From a purchasing side, it's twofold. It's around being as efficient as you can in your approach to procurement and your catering purchasing, and also being as appealing as you can as a customer. The more appealing as you are to a supplier, that will impact your pricing. So what we would suggest, an activity that we do, but for those care homes that don't work with a procurement partner like Allman Hall, I think always make sure that you really thoroughly review price change and price increase information that you get. And critically apply your volumes. If you get a price list with all your products, with some prices coming up and some prices coming down, it's actually quite meaningless until you put your volumes on a month period, a 6 month period of actually what you're spending on each of those products. That's when you start to see the impact of increases and you start to have more detailed view and oversight of what is actually being proposed by your supplier and how that's going to impact your food costs and ultimately your budgets and your offer. So certainly we would say apply your volumes, see where the biggest impacts are, and that won't necessarily be on the biggest price increases by product potentially. What that would do is it allows you then to identify the biggest impact lines. And those are where you want your discussions with your supplier, because you know if you can reduce and negotiate down those costs, that's where you'll see the biggest impact. And that's what we do. We do impact analysis.
And I would imagine in your field as well, Christina, presumably you must be advising care homes to do something rather similar as regards to the kind of things that you offer.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something we're doing more of. So and more using kind of technology to assist us in doing that. So, for example, we've recently officially launched our connected assets, which basically means that we can see how many cycles the laundry machine's doing, how that cycle is working, is it getting up to temperature, and so on. And we're still very early days. It was only kind of officially launched at the start of November, but we have 3,000 appliances connected, most of which are in care homes. And what that's enabling us to see and our customers to see is some of the usage around their laundry machines. What that's enabling us to do is go out and either share directly with customers, because we can see how they're using their asset. Look, are you aware that I looked at our portal this morning and I spotted that one of our customers, their drying cycles are typically 50% longer than we're seeing in any of, you know, anywhere else in the estate. So they could just be, you know, set the default wrong. And we know dryers are huge consumers of electricity. They're not cheap to run. So, you know, we can contact that care home today and say, are you aware? And if there isn't a sort of valid reason for them to be running those cycles much longer, they can immediately cut back on the cost of the use of that asset.
And so this can all be done from somebody sitting at your HQ, observing what's going on in all points of the compass.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think technology can really help, particularly care home managers, identify, you know, are we actually using our appliances as efficiently as we can or should be? And, you know, we're learning, honestly, as much as our customers are. And it's an incredibly interesting journey that we're on. But there are so many examples of, I mean, another example was we saw a customer, a site started doing a much higher percentage of thermal cycles. And again, you know, thermal cycles, much more energy intensive, and should be only be used kind of when required. So, you know, we contact the customer to let them know, and, you know, we're working to a point where customers can kind of see this for themselves without us having to kind of contact them. But it turned out when it was investigated that there was a new staff member and they were defaulting to thermal washes. So immediately, you know, they were trained up and sort of the costs to that care home of running their washing machines dropped as a result. Now, that would have probably come to light anyway eventually, but you know, we were able to kind of intervene much earlier than perhaps might have been picked up. You know, it might have been when the bill hit at the end of the month that they were like, crumbs, what's happened to our electricity bill? But we were able to intervene when we saw that change in pattern.
Yes, picking these things up earlier, absolutely vital. Rachel, I think you wanted to make a point on that, did you?
Yeah, I think Christine's made a really interesting point here, which is around knowledge, information, and also the use of technology. And I think a combination of those things is really key for care homes to start managing, reducing and mitigating costs. I mean, we would say from an operational perspective, recipes, a lot of chefs they go into a kitchen and cook. That's what they do. That's their trade. And sometimes find having detailed recipes slightly negatively impacts their ability to get on, do their job and have flair and what they're trained in. But actually using a platform to have your costs sort of detailed within a recipe is hugely helpful, because you can then start to plot out all of your recipes across a menu cycle, calculate the cost of those, see the ingredients and start to challenge them and flex them and adjust them. And never would you do that in a way that would negatively impact quality, but actually you can make quite a significant reduction in your food costs just by shaving off costs through making simple changes, cuts of meat, type of protein you use, type of cheese you're using, moving to own brands, things that don't impact the final dish, slightly reducing portion sizes on those ingredients that aren't required from a nutrient perspective. So I think having that information at hand and using technology to support that is a really useful tool for care homes, certainly when it comes to catering and other areas.
Yes, absolutely. Let me bring Mark in here. He's been a bit quiet for the moment. But Mark, what we've heard here from Christina and from Rachel makes me think that there's a lot of innovation going on out there. And I should imagine you're part of it as well.
Absolutely. And I think I can complement everything that Rachel and Christina have been saying there. Looking at, say, you know, the laundry issues, is simple things like training and education in terms of size of load versus capacity or size of a machine. That might help with cycles. That might help reduce the use of the machine energy down, because the machine is working to its maximum capacity, which is what it's designed to do. Otherwise, there wouldn't be different size machines, as an example. Or having different structures in place for clothes, linen, bedding, towels, etc. That's all going to help, because picking up on something that Christina said there is that somebody new came in and defaulted the setting to the thermal wash. Well, you know, the same sort of thing can happen if you're trying to dry the wrong types of material together, because it'll just take longer. Coming back to what Rachel was talking about in terms of the buying lists and products for food, that is a massive area for technology to come in and help with those things, because if you put the information into the right system, they're going to give you the answers, right, you know, smack bang in the face, so you can see really what that thing is costing you. And although it might be the thing you've done forever, it may not be the right thing to do right now. And making those subtle changes to the products is a really good thing for people to be able to do. But coming back to the prices, I think the other thing that care homes should look to do is reduce their range, because then they'll be buying a smaller range of products in larger volumes, which means the supplier is able to give you a better discount because they're more certain of your spending patterns. Rather than having, say, 1,500 items in a basket, see if you can cut it down to 500 without losing any of that quality or that nutrition. And even if you can't get to 500, you could still half the size of your basket, which means you're in a better place to negotiate.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting way of doing it. Rachel, is that presumably that's something you've already got in mind, have you?
Absolutely. Absolutely agree with Mark on that. Your buying list should really be trimmed down to just the products that you need to deliver your service. And as Mark said, in terms of quality, nutrition and offer. Often what happens is buying lists grow over a period of time and you have something called the tail. So that you have your core high spend lines, which will contribute to most of your spend. And that will be a sort of lower percentage, often about 20% will contribute to about 80% of spend. But products are added and added to the tail. And typically that's where margin will be loaded. And they're those products that you don't really need. So we do a lot of work with care homes looking at their ABL and giving suggestions of how to trim that down and make that as efficient as they can. And as Mark said, it then focuses volume on certain key lines, the important lines, which then puts you in a better position for negotiations with suppliers. So we would suggest really doing a review of your buying list, getting rid of duplications. If you're buying three different types of tomato puree, for example, you probably only need one. Focusing and understanding what are your high spend categories, what are those key lines. Also review pack sizes. Care homes can be notorious for having storage challenges. So certain pack sizes may not be appropriate, but there will be a cost benefit to choosing different pack sizes. I think the other one is to really look at branded products. Some branded products, things like tea, coffee, often perhaps Bouillon's stocks, will be noticeably different for the residents' experience. But there will be other brands that actually are used within dishes where if you try the own brand and ask your supplier to sample an own brand, you may find there's absolutely no difference, but there will be an increased cost because of the cost for that manufacturer that's added on for their marketing. And
let's move on to Christina now, because you're dealing mainly in the energy sector, and I noticed that you want to talk about how connecting devices using the Internet of Things. Now, we've already brought out that element when you mentioned about how somebody could spot from a long way away how efficiently a machine was being used. How can you develop that with care homes going into the future, do you think?
What's really interesting, and this is where the analyst in me, like, push, you know, hold me back if I get a bit techie, but, you know, one machine doing one cycle will throw off thousands of data points. And of course, we at JLA will look at that and go, well, we think these are the 10 really interesting things from this, but we might be wrong, right? So that's why it's really important that we work with care homes to understand, well, what is important out of all this, you know, out of this, you know, billions of data points that we could collate, what's interesting and actually what's useful. And I think that's why we've kind of focused on things like, you know, thermal cycles, volume thermal cycles, or what's the profile of the cycles you're doing. So, you know, let's take a manager who's overseeing a number of care homes. They could, for example, compare the profile of the cycle types across different care homes and see actually one care home is, you know, doing far more thermal washes or high cost, you know, energy intensive washes. Fundamentally, there isn't any real reason for that. Let's go and understand what's happening in that care home and why it's different to the rest of our care home group, for example. There's so much that the kind of this concept of connecting your asset to the internet and seeing what it does. But what's key is that we focus on what's going to make a difference to care homes. And actually, these last few months with what's happening with energy prices, it has really zeroed us in on the cost side of things. So prior to that, we were actually really focusing on the carbon emission side of things. Now, they're not that different, right? If something's expensive, it's probably because it's using up a lot of gas or electricity, and therefore it's very carbon intensive. But we've just flipped from going, you know, actually this is about kind of primarily around the kind of carbon emissions and carbon footprint. Actually, do you know what? No, this is primarily around cost and how can we help customers use their appliances, you know, far, you know, as efficiently as is possible.
And as far as saving money, say on heating goes, is there much you can offer there? Because we're all scratching our heads domestically and at work trying to find ways of saving. But a care home needs heating, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's very frustrating, isn't it? And I'm sure your listeners get frustrated when they hear people say, oh, turn the thermostat down. It's just, you know, it's not an option. For me, when we talk about heating, I think given the current cost of gas and electricity, where they are, obviously we don't know what's going to happen kind of post-March, but I don't think this is going to resolve anytime quickly. I think we need to start thinking differently. And what do I mean by that? So heating typically accounts for about 70% of a care home's energy bills. And historically, you know, we've always thought it's the right thing. Get as much life out of a boiler as possible, right? Because they're very expensive appliances, and even kind of environmentally, it feels like the right thing to do, yeah? But what we've seen since we've really dug into this is the boilers we put in place today are 98% energy efficient. Typically, they'll be replacing boilers that are maybe 15 to 20 years old. And often those are kind of non-condensing boilers, which are now in the region of 60% efficient, could be worse. Now, to bring that to life, if you're using an old boiler today, you're paying over 1.6 times what you need to be for your gas. And if you replace an older inefficient boiler with an energy efficient one, you can reduce your gas bills by 40%. Which is, you know, is huge. And, you know, I think for me, and, you know, I appreciate this is no small undertaking for a care home to consider, but all of a sudden that kind of, if you look at, okay, if I spend X on putting a new boiler in today, maybe 2 years ago you'd looked at it and gone, it'll take me 10 years to pay that back. Well, today that's down to sort of 4 or 5 years. Like the return on that investment because of what's happened to the prices, it is significantly different. Now, because ESG is an area of interest, you know, prior to this cost of living, we were looking at sort of alternative heating solutions. So, you know, heat pumps and things like that. But and whilst we're still doing that, and while we're still working with some customers to look at what role can those play, because, you know, a boiler still is not good from an environmental perspective. The cost of electricity at the moment is so prohibitive that actually our message with a number of care home customers is that a new efficient boiler is often the kind of most pragmatic option right now to reduce your energy bills and do the most kind of environmentally sort of friendly solution.
No, that's an interesting one that probably a lot of care home managers haven't really considered, that they probably bracket that under the too expensive for now department.
Yeah, and the irony is those who've really got good use out of their boilers, you know, who've got sort of boilers in place for, you know, that are 15, 20 plus years old, they've probably done that because they've really looked after their systems and they've made sure they're maintained and they've done a great job of getting the most out of that asset. But the irony is now that they're, as a result of looking after that system so well, they're now paying over the odds for their gas and electricity.
Mark, are you finding the hardware, the boilers, is that something that crosses your desk very often?
It doesn't cross my desk in the job I do now, but it absolutely did when I was working at Sanctuary. And I think everything that Christine has just said there, it rings true in terms of people traditionally looking to keep things as long as possible. But there are some forward-thinking companies out there where they are looking at newer technology. Because one of the points I was going to raise about that is 30%, but Christina's just whacked that up to 40%, which is brilliant. you know, there has to be that forward thinking approach and getting that capital expenditure into change the equipment, particularly boilers, because you're saving it on your revenue costs. And it's the revenue costs that really are the things that care homes need to focus on. So if you're able to use less energy, therefore pay less for it, then that's going to help where other costs can't be cut. So yeah, there's a double-edged sword, as Christina's explained really well, is that traditionally looking after the old stuff is the best thing to do because it stops capital expenditure. But right now it's got to flip the other way.
Rachel, what's your take on that? Do you agree with that, that capital expenditure is something that care homes might not think about at this time, but it's perhaps the wisest thing to do?
Yeah, absolutely agree. It's very challenging when you're trying to reduce costs to consider spending what seems a significant amount of money, but the longer term benefits are worth the investment. And we would say that from a catering side, catering equipment, modern, more efficient equipment would drive a reduction in cost.
Just to wrap things up then, Christina, can you give us a particular example of anybody who, through your help, has been able to save a lot of money and energy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we... there's sort of a number of kind of innovative solutions in the market looking at how do we create more efficiency in laundry rooms, particularly in care homes. We happen to have a particular product called Otex, and effectively it's an energy efficient alternative to thermal disinfection. And through the connected piece, we're now learning a lot more about how efficient that's helping our customers be. And we've got a great example. We just sort of pick one customer who we've worked with closely in terms of the connected piece, and we had a look at what have their energy bills been over the last 30 days versus what they might have been if they hadn't been using Otex. Essentially, it looks like they've saved over £950 on their energy bills in the last 30 days. Now, they are a big care home, so they've got over 100 residents. They're dementia focused, and they're based in Yorkshire. So, you know, obviously electricity prices vary depending on where you are and your deal and so on. But yeah, that was pretty astounding.
That sounds a big amount, and good luck to them if they can make that work for them on a regular basis. As regards work in the kitchen, Rachel, have you got some tips that you can give us on that?
Yes, absolutely. I think that there are a number of things, and I'd obviously talked in more detail about recipes, but also teams. The more skilled a team member is within the kitchen, the more efficient they'll be. The more efficient they'll be, the better they'll manage costs. So revisit training on processes and practical skills. Also look at where there can be negative cost implications, things like stock management. Revisit and review how you approach stock management to minimize that holding stock and reduce wastage. Also food wastage and portion control in general. How is that recorded and managed, and can that be reviewed? The other thing is to look at increasing in-house production. So are homes using prepped vegetables, for example, ready-made sauces? Can those be prepared by the team? We would suggest that actually you would need to do a cost-benefit analysis, because more kitchen preparation requires labour, energy, equipment depreciation as well. And the other thing always is to consider seasonality. Is really looking at what is at better cost at different points in the year.
Mark, you wanted to make a point on that too, did you?
Yeah, if I could, I'd just build on what Rachel's just said, because it's just one thing I found in the past, is also a cheap way of looking to save what could be a big sum of money is to look at the catering equipment that your teams are using in the kitchen, particularly the cooking trays. And what I mean by that is if you've got a catering capacity that you could provide food daily for 80 people, but you've only got 60 residents in the care home. If you're spending £5 a day per resident, you could be throwing away £36,000 a year. So in terms of where we are with trying to save money, that is one thing that I bet there are a number of care homes out there with. They've bought what they think is the right thing, bigger is better, but not when a chef is used to fill in the tray and then throwing a big chunk of it away in the bin. The other thing is just to click on the other thing, where it's become a bit of a common theme recently, is wonky veg and wonky fruit. It'll save you money, but there's no quality difference, but it also makes some residents and staff chuckle every now and again.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have available for today, but I hope that's been some useful information and some useful tips to help in the current cost of a living crisis. My thanks go to Mark McCarthy, the CFO of Zupa, Rachel Venditti, the Business Development Manager at Allman Hall, and Christina Larkin, Chief Data and Marketing Officer at JLA. This has been the Care Home Management Magazine podcast on the cost of living crisis, kindly sponsored by RotaCloud, online software that makes managing your care teams, rotas, timesheets, and annual leave easy. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. We have more podcasts lined up for you throughout 2023, so I hope you'll join us again. But for now, goodbye.